tomorrow all the things were gone. I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, where the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. God bless the USA.
Well, good morning, Thumper. Good to see you, my friend.
Good morning, Dan. How are you on this fine Tuesday morning?
Well, I think we're doing well, but we have to be talking about something this morning that I think it's going to be more and more important as the days go by. Harry Bullions, who is one of my very personal favorite people in the whole world, happens to be our guest today, and we're going to be talking about what's been going on in South Africa. And now it's coming home to roost, because it's here in the United States. It's clearly here. We also have a gentleman from South Africa that's going to be our guest. His name is Hedrick de Ryk, and Hedrick is going to join us as well. And we're going to be talking about just exactly how we've slipped into communism, how we've fallen for it, and now the lessons not learned, what we're going to be facing in the days and weeks and months and years to come if we don't pull our head out of our great big old keister here and start getting involved and being part of the solution instead of being the problem. I see Harry's on right now. Harry, I want to welcome you to the program. It's always such a great pleasure to see you, my friend. You are, in my mind, one of the great patriots of not only South Africa, but I think of the world.
Well, Dan, thanks. It's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me. And I feel at home with you guys.
Well, good to have you with us, Harry and Hendrick. I'm going to mute now because the roofers are on the roof, ripping off the old roof, getting ready to put on a new one. So there's a lot of noise coming from the attic. So,
all right. Well, thanks, Thumper. And I do see that Hendrick de Ryk is on with us as well. Good morning, Hendrick. Good to see you, my friend.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for having me. And it's always good being on your show.
Well, I like your dress. It looks like you're prepared for exactly what we're going to be talking about today. So I love that photo. It's I wish we didn't have to have photos like that, but obviously at least you know what's going on. That's for sure.
I totally agree, Dan. I chose that photo because we are nice guys, and we are peace-loving guys and freedom-loving people. But we know our freedom is at stake and our survival is at stake. So that is why I've got that photo on.
Yeah, well, it's perfect. And incidentally, last week we had a program called Good Guys with Guns on, of all times to have it, on Easter Sunday. But it was put on for a very good reason, because if we're not willing to defend ourselves, we're going to lose our Christian culture as well, because I think people need to realize this isn't just a fight against America or South Africa. This is a fight against humanity and against specifically the Christian church, because they want to get rid of us. So I appreciate your being with us. We originally were going to have Brendy Wells with us, but Brendy texted me this morning and they had a major catastrophe come up, and she could not be part of the program program. So I'm sure that you gentlemen will more than admirably make up for her. So I appreciate that. Let's start with Harry. Harry, I want to, it's been a while since I've talked to you. Gee, I don't know what we've been doing here. We need to talk a lot more.
Yeah, Dan. No, I've also kept a bit of a low profile over the last while. My mother, who was a character in the book, you may recall, my mother passed away in January. So it's been a little bit of a tough time around here, because she's left a huge, big hole in the universe. Mm-hmm. That lady was a force of nature. I wanted to just point out that the flag that Hendrik has there. Was the flag of the old Transvaal Republic that fought against British imperialism between 1899 and 1902. So it occupies a very specific cultural slot in South Africa. It drives some people absolutely mindless with rage. And those who know a little bit of history understand what it stands for. And it really means the ordinary guys who did the world no damage, fighting for their existence against the overwhelming imperial might.
Well, and now you're fighting really an overwhelming world might, but people need to understand this isn't just South Africa. It isn't specific nations involved. We're talking a worldwide fight against communism, and we're on the defensive in a big way, aren't we?
Yeah, well, you know, folks like Ilana Mercer and myself have been trying to warn particularly the United States, but the West in general, that guys, this thing's coming for you. You have no clue what it is. You don't know how to recognize it in the sunlight. We're going to try and explain, but you're not going to know exactly when it hits you. You're just going to wake up one day and wonder, where the hell did my life go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Exactly. And why has everything shifted so radically that we've lost all of our property rights? We open our program with Lee Greenwood and the Singing Sergeants, proud to be an American. But the fact is we really don't know anymore if we're free. We aren't free. Mm-hmm. We're slipping into the same terrible path that happened to South Africa, and it's happening all over the world.
I was actually wondering, I mean, I really do enjoy and truly appreciate that song. I was just wondering, I trust the fact that it's guys in uniform and girls in uniform singing that. I trust that drives the right people completely insanely up the wall.
No question about it. That's why we do it. You know how I am. I'm kind of like you. I enjoy driving people completely and totally insanely up the wall.
Because the folks who are offended by that need to suffer. Mm-hmm. They need to suffer. They are destroying everything we hold dear in the West. They set no store by anything that is mentioned in that song, and I want them to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Well, the one thing that happens over and over again, the people who create wealth, who create progress, who create industry, who create all the things that make life good in the West and enjoyable. They want those things, but they want to destroy the people who created that. Yeah. And that's insane. That is absolutely the definition of insanity, because they want to get rid of the people who created all that wealth.
You know, Dan, sorry if I'm going to wax a little bit here. My father-in-law, as you know, was a fighter pilot over Italy and over Greece in the Second World War. He was shot down twice. My youngest uncle fought up the length of Italy. He was a dispatch rider and rode between the South African units and the United States units. they gave us the world the way we have it. And it's like these folks who are now in command have zero respect. Well, forget respect, zero appreciation. Forget appreciation. I'm not even sure they have any understanding of that. And every Saturday morning, the wife and I, we walk up the hill here through this immense British Columbia forest, walk a mile to a simple A&W breakfast spot. And these days we can't really eat inside, so we sit and shiver on the outside. There's a little roof there under which you can sit at a little wire table. That's the world we are now in. And we have a breakfast. And then just before 9 o'clock, there's two gentlemen who arrive every Saturday. And the one is close. He's got to be really scraping 100 years of age. And he was one of the people who worked at Bletchley House in Britain during the Second World War, decoding the Enigma system that the Germans had. And I can talk forever to that gentleman because I appreciate him. Mm-hmm. And I don't find too many people who do. Something's gone.
But you're right.
Sadly, sadly wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you, Harry. First of all, you and I've talked. We've been friends now for at least a half a dozen years. I think I started interviewing you before Trump was president. Obama was involved in the presidency, and you know the fact is, we are watching. It's like we're slow walking the death of the United States. Yep. And history, because what they're doing is they're destroying all the evidence of all the wonderful things that so many of our previous generations put into play, that fought and died and worked and did everything possible to make our world a better place. And now they're in the process of destroying it. And I've been telling you for some time, and I think you're finally, I hope you're on board with me on this one, but this is all part of UN Agenda 21. They've been talking about openly about doing everything they're doing, including this plandemic nonsense with the vaccines and all the rest. They have been planning this for a very, very long time. FDR said, there's no such thing as an accident in government. If it happens, it was planned.
Well, I think Canada is, how do I put this? Philosophically, one step ahead now, simply, well, not philosophically, they're politically one step ahead of you in this mess, in the sense that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who I have elsewhere described as a hairdo with legs, he said openly on television around about September of last year, he said the pandemic is the opportunity to remake society. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there are folks who really do see this misery and hell that mankind is going through. They see it as an opportunity to put a noose around the neck of mankind and lead it to where they want to lead it.
Exactly.
You know, they're abusing all of this. Mm-hmm. Exactly. He said it openly. It's not as though I have to invent anything or analyze anything. The guy got on TV and he said it straight into the camera.
And they've been saying it right along. And Harry, our listeners are a pretty educated group, but I have to keep pounding this into everybody's head. They plan on getting rid of 93% of humanity. The problem with progressives or communists is that they love humanity. They just hate humans.
Yeah, that's right.
and they're trying to destroy 93% of the people living on this earth. And they feel that that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. And the masses represents everybody else except themselves.
Except themselves, yeah.
But they use the word masses.
Mm-hmm. They do. Mm-hmm. They absolutely do. Well, Hendrik, I want to have you update our folks on what's been happening in South Africa. You sent me an article that I read, and it was talking about Noah Green and the guy that just killed a police officer, ended up with him dead, Nation of Islam, and how the BLM and ISIS and all this stuff has been working in South Africa. It's kind of like a coalition of some of the worst people in the world coming together to try to promote this agenda that's incredibly racist and incredibly despicable, and trying to eliminate basically the whole white race, and especially in South Africa.
Yeah, that's true, Dan. I'm not sure if you've got a link there that you can maybe just show to your viewers. I can maybe see if I can share my screen.
I did send it to Thumper last night, and I think he's got it, and we can pull some of those pictures up. Anyway, go ahead and talk about it, and we'll Thumper's online right now trying to you started your screen sharing.
Sure, okay. You can see, maybe it's easier that way.
Yeah, that's great.
Just to mention also with Harry, just the one little correction there on the flag. The color is green, if you can see that. We belong to the UNPO, and the flag was registered in 1995. It's called the Freedom Flag or Struggle Flag. And we are a huge, big family of minorities. And what makes us different than the U.S. is, rather than African Americans being a minority, we as whites are a minority in Africa.
My apologies, Hendrik. That looked like a field clear to me with slightly off colors.
That's true, Harry. And that's why many people, like you say, get all hot under the collar, but and then they don't know about this flag. But that's why I love it even more.
I think that's why you guys chose that color, that combination. It looks just like a Vierkleur.
Yes.
Like the French tricolor, the South African one has four colors, so it's a Vierkleur.
Yes, and even so, I mean, it's our heritage. The orange, white, and blue is from our culture, going way back centuries, and even with the Dutch. So, but the green makes it different, but the four colors in the same way as the old Boer flag with the red there. But it's interesting if you go and look at the UNPO.org site, to see who's part of the family. And we are actually very, I don't want to use this word much, but we're open-minded, and it's more on the a liberal conservative side, and not right wing, as many people want to put it on a scale, if I can say it in that way. Not that right wing is bad. I mean, we also right wing and conservative. So coming back to the with Noah Green, I feel this is a subject that needs to be investigated. Maybe there's some of your listeners that's got blogs and can go further into this. But once you connect the dots, and as your show is called as well, then you can start seeing the bigger picture as how it will affect the U.S. and how the radical left uses South Africa as what I see as an extension to use it as a radical platform to spread their radicalism. So this Noah Green that was shot at the White House, just when was it, last week, he was part of the Nation of Islam, or the NOI, as it's called in just short. And incidentally, he went to South Africa on a two-week holiday. Now you think, you know, maybe it was just a holiday or whatever. But if you take the link and the name Nation of Islam, we have to go back a bit to about 2013 And then more questions start arising. Now, just to put things into context for your listeners, and what we've got to remember is that the South African regime, the ANC, African National Congress, is in an alliance regime with the South African Communist Party. Your listeners can go and read through that page as well and click on the link. There's a link to the South African Communist Party. So in 2013, the U.S. sent ambassador to South Africa called, his name was Patrick Gaspard. I'm not sure if your listeners are or know about him. He was part of the Democratic Party, and then later he was became president of the Open Society of George Soros. And everybody is probably familiar with George Soros and the philanthropy that he does.
I guess you can call it that. Yeah.
So he's funding all these extremist organizations, even in the U.S., as we see with BLM and Antifa. I'm sure if there's proper investigation, more things will come up. But coming back to Patrick Gaspard and the Open Society, Patrick Gaspard was ambassador in 2013 in South Africa. And incidentally, he gave visas to the Nation of Islam and the New Black Panther Party to visit South Africa. And I put in hours listening to their radio shows, trying to find pictures to try and trace their steps of what they were planning. And one of the things, they wanted to go and talk at the Voortrekker Monument, which was basically a monument commemorating a big battle after we promised to God we will build a church if he helped us. So I think for them it was symbolic to go there, but we managed to cancel that before they could go and do that. They spoke about going to Zimbabwe to go and see Mugabe. So it would, the whole picture started becoming clearer that they were trying to set up a network in South Africa for the Black Panthers and the Nation of Islam. For what it is, I don't know. Maybe for funding, you know, I don't know what the real cause is. But I do know they did set up one satellite branch in Pretoria in South Africa for the New Black Panther Party. So putting things into perspective, we've got a high crime rate. And as a minority, we are being targeted by a majority of institutionalized racism, like BEE, Black Economic Empowerment, and murders with farm murders. Just this week, within the 72 hours, there were four gruesome farm attacks and murders that happened. One was a wheelchair-bound farmer that was murdered. And he's in that wheelchair because 20 years ago he was shot in the back and he became paralyzed. But this time he wasn't so lucky. So coming back to the New Black Panthers, that is, I'm not sure if your listeners are familiar with Malik Zulu Shabazz. He was the president of the New Black Panthers at one point. He's sitting here. I'm not sure if you can see that photo properly. He's sitting here, and in the back is a PAC member, Pan-African Congress. Harry might be able to elaborate later if he knows, if he wants to.
Those would be the people who attacked a church and shot up the parishioners in South Africa.
They actually, the PAC merged with Malema's party. Malema is the Economic Freedom Fighters, as you know. They're a Marxist organization, and he's the guy that said it's not the time yet to kill the white people, basically talking about a genocide.
Not yet.
So the PAC merged with the EFF. Pardon?
He said not yet. I mean, the way he phrased
not
it.
Not yet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It, like, it's going to happen, but not yet.
So there's, I found quite a lot of photos where the new Black Panthers was with PAC, and the same, just a year later, the PAC and the EFF merged. They had pamphlets in the US talking about their recent mission to South Africa, and that they were spoke to ministers in Zimbabwe. So, I mean, it leaves a lot of questions. What did they do? Are there some kind of money being funneled to extremists in America? And the main thing is, this Democrat, Patrick Gaspard, gave visas to these racists and radicals to go and set up a network. Shouldn't that be investigated? Shouldn't there be more questions about this?
Hendrik, can I ask a question? Dan, can I put a question to Hendrik?
Absolutely.
There's you're leaving out, I think, one aspect, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but that collection, before they went off to South Africa, issued some sort of a statement in which they quite clearly explained they want to kill white men, women, and children. They put it in those words.
Correct.
They put it in those words. They quoted black on white.
Mm-hmm. I've actually got those quotes here, Harry, and I actually use it as an anthem. I'm just trying to find the area.
And I think it's important it's important that Americans hear these words and understand these words in plain English. I suggest you take these people seriously. Stop thinking they are fringe operations. Ordinary, decent Americans are now a fringe operation. These people are the ones who are telling you what to do.
Mm-hmm. And Harry, Hendrik, also I want to mention the fact that, and you sent me something on this, but wasn't Shabazz the one that said, talked about how killing white women was a desirable duty because you were killing the baby factories that produce the white people that they're trying to eliminate?
That's the quote I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, correct. Yeah. It's on that page as well, but it was Muhammad. I think he's dead now. But even Zulu Shabazz.
Oh, my heart bleeds.
Black Panthers today use it as an anthem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, people need to understand that this is a dead serious issue. And these people, yeah, they're also very anti-Israel. And they talk about getting rid of the Jews and getting rid of the white man. And of course, Shabazz refers to anybody white as a cracker. He was even talking at some place in here about how he wasn't, as a Nation of Islam person, he wasn't going to go to Mecca to hang out with all those crackers. If he wanted to throw stones, he was going to throw them at South African white men.
Yeah, that's correct. And also, I'm not sure if your listeners know about the ISIS insurgents in Mozambique that happened recently. There was gas discovered, and by Total and a French company, which now totally took their employees out of Mozambique. But last week, they discovered some of the people that worked for Total, contractors. It was 12 white people, and they were all beheaded. Mm. Now, I'll just imagine if the roles were changed around, if it was white Christians beheading 12 black Africans, it would be worldwide news for days on end.
Oh. By the way, have you noticed any of this on CNN?
You don't notice any of this.
NBC, stuff. ABC, CBS, the BBC.
None of it.
Amazing.
And that's why it's so important to keep programs like ours on the air and alive, because we're the only ones that are reporting this kind of stuff. Same thing with Noah Green. You know, they don't mention any of the connections with Nation of Islam. And in fact, didn't they take down his webpage just so that they could make sure that link didn't get made? Yes. Yeah.
So I sent you an email, Dan, that had two images attached. It had a link about farm murders in South Africa, and there were two images attached. And the one says, Senekal, I can't breathe. Mm-hmm. It shows you how events in the – it's not just South Africa – walking in the back door of the United States. It's also the United States now exporting its issues to South Africa, where they get amplified and played back to you, okay? Mm-hmm. And that attached image shows one of the EFF spokespersons. You remember that Hendrik said just now that the PAC with the new Black Panthers having coalesced with the EFF in South Africa. Well, the EFF is now parading around in black T-shirts with I Can't Breathe written on them. Mm-hmm. This while they are singing into the faces of white farmers, kill the farmer, kill the Boer.
Yeah.
Which is a clip that I sent you, right?
Yeah, and we saw that. We played that the last time we did a program together, and you were right. You said, you know, that we're getting to the point where the farmer's going to start pushing back, and we're going to end up with a major bloodbath. And all I can say is that anybody, if you force them into a situation where they have no other choice, they're going to fight back. Of course they will.
And this is what started happening in October last year in South Africa, is that the farmers felt that they had finally been pushed over an edge, and they started reacting and went into the town of Senekal. But the government minister turned up and went and sat down at the courtroom with the leader of the EFF. So there's no doubt which side the government is on. I mean, they gave this monster a, what was it, a 20 or a 24 car escort, police escort into town. Okay, the guy who sings Kill the Whites, he gets escorted into town.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, let's talk about now, Hendrik, let's talk about where we are at as far as the farm murders and what's going on right now in South Africa, and then I want Harry to join in on that discussion.
All right, it is the farm murders are increasing, and as I mentioned as well, just in the 72 hours, there was already four farm attacks. There's a lot of people taking over land at the moment, and even foreigners, basically from other African countries, also now feel that they can join the party and take over land. So far, the police have seemed to be driving them off the land again, but I can only see this increasing. As for, I think people are just, you know, especially with a lockdown, things are just escalating at this moment because the government, the ANC regime, was bankrupt before the lockdown. So the lockdown came like, as we say, mana out of heaven. Because they can use that as an excuse now to say, but now we're bankrupt. And I see the government is already standing with open hands and begging for vaccines and things like they say they can't afford it. And so lots of people are poor. So it's becoming a bigger problem where where, I mean, even in these attacks in this 72 hours, the one with the wheelchair-bound farmer, nothing was stolen from his house. So that leaves, that's one of the major worries about these hate crimes that's happening against us. Not sure if Harry wants to add there.
No, all I can say is that in October of last year, there was a moment of hope when the farmers started reacting, and a couple of marches around the Cape and so forth, one or two in Pretoria. But my perception is that it's gone quiet and people know my opinion. Don't expect the world to do anything if you're not prepared to do anything yourself. If you want to sit there and die, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And I think
it's time for my people over there to start, you know, stop behaving like just a collection of good Christians, you know, presenting the other cheek. That, unfortunately, does not work. It really does not work. You're going to have to do stuff. And the word do is missing. They basically, well, you know, just believe that if they're just good Christians, all will come right.
Yeah, and that's an issue. And I'll mention that, Harry, because as you know, I was baptized into the Dutch Reformed Church. That's one of the problems with the people, the white people of South Africa. And I'm sorry to say that, but it is a problem because they think in terms of what is right in the Bible. And in fact, what they're doing is they're allowing their own extermination because they're afraid to be anti-Christian. And it isn't a matter of being anti-Christian. It's a matter of standing up and protecting yourselves and your families.
That's true, Dan. I will also say, I think there's a lot of worries as well. And probably, you know, the media again, like putting, if you want to stand up, the media puts you down. And also your own people put you down. So it's even what we see in America, it's Americans doing it to Americans. Mm-hmm. In our country, it's Afrikaners doing it to Afrikaners, because it, even in the Boer War, when the rebels was fighting in the field and commandos, it was the people that was giving them out to the empire, giving them away to be caught, was their own people. And we're seeing this repeat of history all over again. It's Afrikaners and Boers in positions of power, in media, in society. But I'm not sure if Harry's going to agree with me, but I can also see a bigger divide again coming between rich and poor. Mm-hmm. Apartheid created a white middle class. The ANC is destroying that white middle class, where we're only going to have rich people and a whole lot of poor people, white poor people.
Well, that is the communist model.
Yeah, yes. It's the communist model. And we're seeing it in the United States as well.
And it's the more you have to lose, the less you see a problem with anything. And you throw the poorer people under the bus just to hold on to your little hill of possessions. And that's what it's becoming more and more like that, because South Africa in the apartheid days and maybe a little bit after that, as a minority group, our communities were quite strong. The fiber in the community was stronger, but there's no community left anymore. People, you know, just to survive, they'll throw somebody else under the bus, and it's all about me and my little survival. And then that's the mindset that's going to happen in the US as well as things get tougher. It's like what Winston Churchill said with these type of people that appease, you know, they think the crocodile is going to eat them last by feeding you first.
Yeah, it's Bonhoeffer on steroids. It's, you know, Bonhoeffer talked about churches, how the different groups in Germany, as they were being herded off to the extermination camps and being herded off to the concentration camps, how the different groups would, the different churches would say, well, it's not us, so we really can't get involved and we can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And they kept doing that until it got to the point where they were the only ones left, and they came for them, and there was nobody to say, don't do this, because that allowed all the rest of them to be exterminated. It's kind of the same thing with the Churchill crocodile theory.
Yeah.
Well, Harry, I want you to do you have some videos that you wanted to bring up? Did you happen to put anything together in that regard?
Yeah, I mailed you a couple of things.
Oh.
So if you
I'll look for them, and we'll see if we can open them up. Yeah. Okay.
So one of them is, forget the video for the moment. I think you want to show people an image that's attached to the original email. The title of the email is Clip and Images for Tomorrow.
Okay. I'm going to forward this to Thumper.
And you'll...
I'm sorry, I didn't pick up on it. I looked, but I didn't see it, and I just found it. So
that contains a video that I put together, but we can ignore that for the moment. It's the images that are attached that I wanted to share, and Thumper can just tell me when he's got it.
I'm looking for emails now. So as soon as I have it, I'll let you know.
I'm just sending them to you, Thumper. I'm sorry about that. I should have been on the ball a little better.
I think there's three separate emails. So I'd like to go back a little bit in the conversation, because this is some imagery that backs up what we said, what we were talking about. And I've been, you know, for more than 10 years, I've been on about things in South Africa are being imported into the US, and people in the United States do not seem to understand that. And you opened your show today with that. But we're now at a point where that stuff has ricocheted around these communities like Nation of Islam and BLM and all of these. All these crowds who people think are just marginal operations, okay? It's ricocheting around in their world and then finding its way back to South Africa with an American coating on it, okay? So you're now having mutual infection. It's at the point where the sore is now so highly developed in the United States that it's infecting back in the direction of South Africa. Mm-hmm. And this image that I'd like Thumper to put up is the one that basically says, Senegal, EFF, George Floyd. Mm-hmm. Don't know if you guys can see it.
Well, we'll keep going until
I'm sorting them out now. I've got them.
Okay.
Okay, we've got okay, there we go. I got it. All right, let's get that up on screen for you.
So that particular image is taken in South Africa, and the guy that you'll see, that's him. He is the spokesperson for the EFF. I'll have you know that the farmers came to town to protest the fact that a kid had been tortured to death on the farm by a black mob. So they came to town to protest about this, but the EFF decided that they would go down in a huge army, complete with, as you can see, a truck for a stage with sound equipment and all kinds of stuff, and they send their spokesperson, and then in the end there was a confrontation with the farmers. But this guy was explaining, you know, what's wrong with white people, etc., 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 and how they don't accept that this kid's murder has anything to do with black people, blah, 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 blah. But look at the T-shirt. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I would like you to know that interested parties in the United States are making sure that whatever infection you have is now also foisted back on the highly endangered farmers in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Okay? The United States and South Africa are connected by the umbilical cord, guys. Okay? You cannot tell me that you don't know where that quote on that T-shirt or that shirt comes from. I mean, it says George Floyd underneath.
Right.
And he's wearing a red cap of the communist EFF, the guys who have been joined by the Nation of Islam, okay, and the PAC. The PAC, just for the record, like I said earlier, is the crowd in South Africa who in 1993 charged a church, shooting up the place and throwing hand grenades among the parishioners. Of course, it was a white church. Okay? And the guy who sent those murderers was eventually made a member of parliament, where he happily lived and got a salary. Now, that PAC was also responsible for the murder of Amy Beale, an American student in Cape Town.
We have comrades today. Who can come?
Sorry.
Okay, so I'm not sure where that came from, but it may be from the video.
It's one of your videos, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just getting it set up.
So on that same email that I sent, there's a connection to a video I made, which is really farm murders in South Africa. It's a compilation of stuff that has, amongst other, is it Katie Hopkins, and it connects it to the murder of this young farmer, and it shows you these guys in operation, complete with T-shirt. So I don't know if there's enough time. It's about 4 minutes long.
No, there's time. Yeah, we can.
So maybe you want to play that to connect it up so you can see what it looks like when the United States lands in South Africa.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll have it here ready in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, Harry, you know what you're talking about is... Okay, good.
No, I don't recognize that at all.
That's not
No, I'm talking the email where you found that T-shirt picture. That very same email. It's not another email. It's that exact email.
Okay.
Let me get point one. Farm murder in South Africa.
Okay.
Harry, would you mind if I quickly just jump in on before you show the video?
Absolutely. Go ahead, Hendrik.
I just want to mention with what Harry said now with the PAC and EFF, during this time when the new Black Panthers came to South Africa, there was murders that happened and there was PAC guys that was caught. Now, I'm not saying this is fact, but from what I know with the new Black Panthers, it wouldn't surprise me if they met up with the PAC and said, hey, let's go and kill some crackers or something. You know, there's a possibility that could have happened, and it would have been vulnerable people.
South Africa is an easy place to stick it to white folks. So there's a certain kind of American who's now going to South Africa to see white people suffer. They enjoy it. You need to understand you do have such people in your midst.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, Harry, we have that video ready now.
Okay, let's run it and see what happens.
All right, here we go.
In conclusion, friends, the result of all of this, the destruction of the family unit, the ruination of a country's identity, the violation of our faith in democracy itself, we are left wondering what the hell we can put our faith in. And furthest down this path are our fellow South Africans. You know, I spent 3 weeks in country with white farmers in South Africa, being systematically cleansed from their land. I traveled to sit with and understand families of the victims and survivors of the relentless attacks by black gangs that can go on between 3 to 6 hours while the white farmers and their wives and children are tortured. I lived on the farms of future victims, just as I promised you I would a year ago, almost to the day, right here. I wanted to share their fears for the monsters that can come in the night. Bernard told me as he looked out over his farm, he still has faith in two things, God and the land. And I believe they are a glimpse into our future. Our South African brothers and sisters are leading the way, readying themselves to make one last stand. Together, we can do this. We promise we will keep the faith in God and in the land. Thank you very much indeed.
Love in the world, I could find no way to see what was being played, so I assume we're at the end of the video.
We are, but I have to tell you, Harry, very powerful. I'm glad you did that. Thank you for showing that, even though you couldn't see it. Very powerful video. I'm sure our viewers and our listeners appreciate your work. That young man that was killed, that was kind of a catalyst for that group that came together. Has anything proceeded from that, or have they just kind of gone back to being victims?
I think they've largely gone back to being victims, but Hendrik can please correct me. He's right there. He would know better. But the way I know my people, they went right back to their prayer meetings.
Yeah, unfortunately, Harry's correct. Nothing happened after that. And it's interesting. It's actually people abroad that's helping us fight. People in other countries that's helping us fight. It's like our people are in this cocoon, in this dream world, and then just go back until the next person is killed, and it's news for maybe a day or two, and then they just go back to their... We are so desensitized to these brutal murders. And I think people just don't know what to do. They are so demoralized. They don't know what to do. And I think it's just about that survival.
You know, the, you go to jail, you come out of there with AIDS, you know. So they are legitimately scared. We know that the government has a hand in a lot of this, directly or indirectly. Even in the particular area where the particular kid was in particular killed, the particular police chief in that area is particularly suspected of having a hand in the cattle theft that's going on there, and that he in particular is going to get protected, in particular by the government, in particular. Mm-hmm. Okay?
It's why is the media, well, we know why the media is so quiet about this, but it's so obvious that what we're seeing happen now worldwide is a complete control of the media by communist interests, by Marxist interests, and they're shutting down any of the information they don't want out to the world. That's why stuff programs like ours are so important to keep on the air, but we're having a heck of a time.
Yeah, Dan, the thing for me is this. I can make the question far more specific. I would like to know what it is that has gone defective in the minds and brains of people like Adriana Amanpour, who used to be a reliable, honest, upright, trustworthy, believable, credible reporter back in history. Mm-hmm. Now I refuse to accept a word she says. I refuse to accept a word that comes out of her mouth. Okay? And I can keep listing these people for you. I want to know what got to them, who got to them, and why they were got to. But they have been gotten to or got to. Something is deeply and profoundly wrong, and I'm of a mind that says that there's a plan, because I cannot believe that honorable, decent people can go so far irrationally left and not realize that they have done so. I see it among some of my friends, you know, in the United States. It's as though, I don't know how else to put it, but it's as though some of my Democrat friends have gone brain dead. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't question a damn thing. They used to be all over the show. Doesn't matter what issue you raised, they'd be on an Apple box and yelling their heads off 10 years ago. Now they shut up and they just perpetrate the same garbage that comes into their ears off the TV. They just echo it like a complete empty box. And I'm saying this of my own friends who I've loved for years. Mm-hmm. I do not understand them anymore. They have stopped questioning. They've stopped asking. They just buy this garbage.
You know, I have to say, Harry, that what I think is going on right now is that the human condition, our natural tendency is to two things. They want to fit in. They don't want to stand out as being outside of the mainstream, because people are afraid that they'll be identified as some kind of a zealot or some. So they want to be part of the mainstream. And the other part of that is that most people are truly mean well and are good people, and they just cannot conceive that what's going on is actually happening. It's the cognitive dissonance thing. They just cannot accept that the world is full of these horrible, evil people who want to destroy humanity, and they just won't accept it. So they're going to go along with the program no matter what.
Yeah, it's like the chicks in the run-up to World War II. You know, I'll never forget the one television program I saw where a guy from the what was then the Czech Republic, he said that, well, you know, in 1938 we were saying, no, this can never happen here. I mean, here in Czechoslovakia we're civilized. This Nazi stuff can't happen here. It'll never happen here. Come on, it's a German thing, you know. And look what happened. Okay. In South Africa, to me, I grew up in a civilized country. It was something like Canada, okay, like a mix of Canada and Australia. And this, you know, this black Africa thing, nah, it couldn't happen here. Can it happen here? No, it's crazy. This is a civilized country. You know, there's all kinds of mechanisms that would stop that. Like hell it did. South Africa is now just regular, ordinary, rubbish Africa. Okay? You know what words President Trump used to describe it. Mm-hmm. And but my comment to him is, you know, if he went back to the White House and looked out the window, he'd see one.
Yeah, yeah.
This is how quickly it happens, okay? I warned people before that civilization is a very thin veneer over humanity. You struggle hard to grow a couple of millimeters of thickness of civilization over the basic animal that is man. And that disappears in a hurry when you let it. Mm-hmm. And right now, you know, I'm so disheartened because I was hoping that there might be some hope for South Africa coming from the United States. I am completely shattered by what has happened because, as I told another American friend, the United States will now have to go to Guinea, you know, Equatorial Guinea, the Central African Republic, and at the highest level, possibly Uganda, to find out how to run an election.
Mm-hmm.
Because you sure as hell can't.
No, that's for sure. Well, I've started referring to the electoral process in the United States. We no longer have a presidential election. We now have a residential selection, and in fact, you know, the process is being controlled by forces that. The American people certainly aren't part of that.
Yeah, I just want to say to you and to your American audience that my love for the entity that is the United States was built in me by my longest standing friend in my life, and he's a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's he who introduced me to the preamble to the Declaration of Independence, and I've said over and over and over that besides the Bible, those are probably the strongest words I've ever seen written in Western civilization. Mm-hmm. They speak to me, okay, very fundamentally, deep in me, and I'm sorry, but the United States I now see, with all the people there that I love so dearly, is not worthy of being custodians of those words anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hate to say it, but I feel much the same way, Harry. I am so disappointed. And, of course, you and I have been talking over a long enough period of time now. We've watched this evolve. And we've been talking about, hey, people, wake up. This is coming. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. It's no longer coming. It's here.
It's here.
And not only is it here, but now it's really starting to go into full bloom. Yeah. You know, the whole communist movement in the United States is literally, they are the ones in the driver's seat now, and we are the ones fighting for survival. Just like Afrikaners have been for the last 30 years now.
Well, yeah, and with a new government you've got, while Thumper has that email available, I didn't want to go off totally on a tangent here, but that very same email has a Iran-US image attached to it. And I want to remind folks of what they had under Obama, because now you have it multiply. And so there was an image attached that says Iran-US PNG. I think folks may have forgotten So it's probably a good time to remind them. Mm-hmm. I see it showing behind me here. I'm getting nowhere with seeing these things.
Okay.
So well, if it's showing you the
it's up, Harry.
The Soviet guys on the Navy guys on those boats in Iran custody, prepare for more of that. Mm-hmm. Because the people who now run your country like images like that.
Okay, that's good point. If I can butt in here, Harry. The South African regime, the ANC, they are allies with Iran. Now, yes. Just to step back in time, we were a nuclear power with nuclear weapons. We dismantled our nuclear arsenal at the end of apartheid, which I think was foresight, was very good foresight at the time, because if it didn't happen, South Africa would have become the first black African country with nuclear weapons.
And they would have shared it with every other terrorist nation.
Correct. We're a country with a high level of uranium. We've got the technology, and Iran's nuclear program would not exist without the post-apartheid regime. That's what your listeners should understand. So South Africa, like we mentioned earlier, is a foundation, is an extension to the radical left's platform to expand their radicalism around the world. The sooner South Africa can be made out and seen as a failure, it would be taking out an important chess piece of the left. When people, Americans just need to understand the big effect South Africa has, because it's a failed country. The media, the left-wing media, is keeping it on life support. It's dead. It's a cadaver. Mm-hmm. But the sooner you take out that chess piece out of the Democratic Party and the left and show to the world it's a failure, it will become better for America on a very strategic level.
South Africa is now like the headquarters of a poison that infects the planet. Okay. And sometime or other, you're going to have to decapitate the snake.
And Harry and Henry, this is a, I guess this is a failed experiment that's been failed over and over and over again. And somehow we never learn the lessons from those failures. And if we want to look at South Africa, who at one time was one of the wealthiest countries in the world, we also have to look at Venezuela. We have to look at Cuba. We have to look at all these places that have become true communist enclaves and are now almost completely destitute and broke. It does not work. What they do does not work. Why do we keep trying to resurrect the idea that this works? It doesn't.
I'll tell you why. Because people don't like maths. And communists can't do maths.
This revolutionary dental device is giving peace of mind for less than $100. It helps get rid of plaque,
tartar, and brain. What in the world is that? Okay.
Somebody needs dental.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And Harry, I shared this with you. I don't know if the others know this, but I shared this with you. My father was a communist. My father and his family were communists and progressive socialists. Not one of them had the slightest idea what entrepreneurship was all about. My dad was a failed farmer. He was failed because he never could figure out how to do anything but work. That's all he knew how to do was work, and he wasn't terribly efficient at it, so he never made a good living at it. Sad to say, but that my my uncle Harold, who was a GS-16. He retired as a Navy commander in the Navy Reserve. He was the closest thing to a success they had in the family, and he didn't have a clue how to invest or do anything. They lived literally by putting their money in government bonds. That's what they thought an investment was. And as a result of it, even though he was far up the food chain, he never ever really became what you would call successful. They just don't understand economics, period.
The idea of, the stupid old phrase, where does money come from? There's no understanding of that. I mean, at one point during the first, the 1994 big elections of South Africa, some ANC people were running around saying, oh, we're going to give every black voter a credit card. Right? Because they see white people getting money out of auto teller machines.
Yeah, no ATMs. Clue that how it works.
No clue that money was elsewhere put in. It's just white people have these credit card things and money comes out of those things, right? This is the kind of thing that is said to people in Africa, combined with, you see this little cardboard box in my hand? This is the little box that makes sure that Mugabe can see how you are voting. And they believe this stuff, okay?
Well, that's why tribalism is such an important part of communism. It's a perfect incubator for communism, because tribalism doesn't understand very basic things as far as economics. They really
don't. It's also a very simple mechanism that says, here are the rules for how to function in your little village. The chief is the chief of everything, and he will provide. Just, you want some land? Go ask him. You want some cows? Talk to him. Okay? And there's some basic rules here and there. And oh, by the way, when he says go to war, you go to war. That's life. Okay, now you take those people out of there and you plug them into a carefully designed Western economy. What you get is South Africa and the future America.
Yeah, and now the United States of America, because those same kind of mentalities are in charge of our government now.
So I wanted to, there was another email I sent that says photos for Tuesday's show, and it has three images attached. I don't know if Thumper sees it there, but they tell a story, and it's almost like a recipe. So I want you to see a reality in operation from where I sit, the life I've lived, and you'll see how I rope these three images together. The first one should say #1 ungovernable.
Okay, I've got
the email.
The number two went up. Okay, let me.
Okay, that's number one. That we need number one specifically.
Yeah, let me get number one up.
Okay. So at the moment, number two is there.
There we go.
It's up okay. Now, Harry.
That is, well, can you remember when that was? Those were the streets of the United States in the days after the 2016 presidential election. Become ungovernable. And I sat over here in Canada and I remembered South Africa in the 1980s. And the catchphrase was, make the country ungovernable. Make it ungovernable. So I immediately recognized what this was. Make it ungovernable. Okay? Well, so There was an attempt now for 4 years to make sure that President Trump couldn't do a darn thing, kept him on his hind legs. Anyone close to him had to be just about killed. I've never seen bloodletting on a scale like that in my life in American politics. It was obscene to watch. Mm-hmm. Now, if we now go to image number two, which is set in Britain. Mm-hmm. I want you to see that. Look at the words that are muddled together in that demonstration. Mm-hmm. It says, decolonize Oxford. That's because Cecil John Rhodes went to Oxford and there's a statue of him on one of the buildings. Then it says, imagine if Oxford protected black lives, blah, 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 blah. It's a very white kid holding it up. Okay, and then you see that sign off to the right. That says Footsack Roads. Now, I don't know if you can recall what that was about, Dan.
Mm-hmm, I do, and as a matter of fact, I'll let you go ahead.
That word is a uniquely South African word. It is what you say to a dog when you want to chase it. And I tried it in New York, and I made a New York Alsatian dog run away by just bending down, looking him straight in the eyes and saying, Footsack! Mm-hmm. Okay, and he ran. And it's the TS in the middle that does the trick. Okay. So someone in that British crowd was using an Afrikaans, a white Afrikaans word, to basically say to hell and get rid of Rhodes. Okay. So you are seeing South African matters and British matters of colonialism, etc. And certainly, I agree, Cecil John Rhodes was the arch colonialist in history.
Well, and Harry, they have to understand, they're rewriting history because somehow they associate Rhodes with South Africa when, in fact, the Boers
wrote him.
They're absolute arch enemy. I mean,
yes.
He was there to try to destroy the Dutch farmers and to take over the whole country.
He's the reason why 30,000 of their wives and children died
in
British concentration camps. We hate the man with a passion. Okay? But it's Footsack Roads over there. Now please go to the third picture, which is an interesting combination, also in Britain. Mm-hmm. Now look at that, because this, to me, shows some of the disease. It's got Rhodes Must Fall, referring to the statue, having already toppled the one in Cape Town. And then they've rolled into that Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. which you will recall is associated in South Africa with black mobs inciting people to kill whites, right? But then you see the sign in the middle, and there's this bedraggled little twerp walking around with a sign above her head. We cannot understand, but we must stand. Mm. And I thought somebody ought to take that picture, find that stupid little idiot, have a pose with that sign, and tell her, you are the symbol of what has gone wrong in the West. Observe, gentlemen. There's your problem. Mm-hmm. Okay? She doesn't understand a damn thing, but she must stand for Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
We don't understand. You sure as hell don't understand, girly. You don't understand, you poor, mind-sodden fool. Mm-hmm. Okay? This is nothing other than liberal guilt in the extreme. They have nothing. Somewhere next to their hypothalamus is now an additional gland called guilt, and it secretes permanently. And that addles their brains.
Guilt.
They can't think.
White guilt. We're the only ones that are guilty, so it's white guilt. There's no such thing as any other form of guilt but white guilt.
Well, look at the picture. Can anybody show me a black face?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one down there in the, kind of in the lower left-hand side, but not many. Not many. Yeah.
Okay. So, there's your problem. Okay. I just think that people under the age of 30 need to be corrected by the head these days. Mm-hmm. Something has just gone profoundly wrong. And don't blame the kids. It's the parents. The parents did that. Mm-hmm. The parents did that.
Frankly, the grandparents. I mean, we've been living with this slow walk of socialism for the last 100 years. And now it's no longer socialism. Now they're exposing themselves as the communists that they always were. And now we're just admitting that this so-called socialism isn't socialism at all. It's tribalism and it's communism.
And now we have a situation in the United States where, and I'm sure a lot of Americans are going to be very angry with me about this, but I'm sort of at a point where I'm not sure I care anymore. And that is that I don't know how you can ask a guy who is apparently pretty much senile to tackle any of this. He couldn't possibly do any of this. He can't get up to a plane without falling 3 times. And I've made the suggestion that maybe we can collect money in Canada and buy him a Cessna so he can reach that height. Okay.
Well,
better yet, maybe, you know, when he goes on these trips, they got to run a gurney next to him or something, or take a stretcher along and possibly a little bag. Please leave the football at home. I can't trust it on that plane. Mm-hmm. God only knows what he's going to do. And, you know, please take a little pouch full of sort of handheld mirrors, small ones, just to check that he's breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry for that, but
no. And the thing is, I am referring to it anymore as we don't have presidential elections anymore. We have residential selections. We've lost the free right to for Americans to choose who their leaders are. It's whoever the outside world wants there. And incidentally, there's a new film coming out on Tuesday, and I believe we're going to preview it on our Connecting the Dots program next Tuesday, that Mike Lindell has done a second film after Absolute Proof, and we're going to be showing that film on Tuesday. So.
Well, this is the thing for me is that the unique thing about America is the way that it swings in extremes. You know, your previous president, if you tried the mirror test on him, the mirror would have melted, right? And now you got one that can't fog the mirror. It's just these extremes, you know. Mm-hmm. And anybody remember the movie Being There?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Go watch it again. I think any Democrat should now go and be compelled to watch the movie Being There.
I thought you were going to bring up Weekend at Bernie's.
Might very well. No, because I was in New York. I lived in New York in when that movie came out. And we went to see it. And I got to tell you, at the end, old Peter Sellers cycles through like 30 takes of trying to deliver this message when they put him in that bed at one point. And nobody wanted to leave the place. Everybody stood and watched this recycling of take after take after take after take. This is at the end of the movie after the credits. Mm. Okay. But the movie is about how a guy who clearly has absolutely no ability whatsoever ends up being president of the United States. And it was made at the time of Jimmy Carter. It was a direct play on Jimmy Carter. Mm-hmm. Okay. And my good Democrat friend told me that Obama was the best thing that ever happened to Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Okay. He and now I got to tell you, yeah. Now we have a situation where Biden is the best thing that ever happened to Obama.
Mm-hmm. Well, I refer to him as old Biden, or as My good friend Edwin Vieira refers to him as China Joe in the Hole.
Yeah, I also called him China Joe. No, it's just... Is the West really going to get led like this? Good Lord, folks.
It's time for Americans to, you know, it's we're seeing it with the face mask thing. We're seeing it with the plandemic. Now, we're being censored all the time. And Harry, in all likelihood, this particular program is going to end up being taken off of Facebook and YouTube and all the social media.
Yeah, but it'll be on Rumble, and they're not doing that. So
Yeah. So you're going to have to go to Rumble, and we're trying to work with Brytheon and some others that we can start getting this word out. But the fact is, we get censored on almost everything we do.
Guys, but I mean, this stuff is simple. On whose watch did Putin go into the Crimea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On whose watch did they do the stuff in Ossetia?
Mm-hmm.
Can somebody wake up at the switch?
And ISIS, all the stuff that went on
all that.
ISIS, yeah.
That's when, you know, I wrote you an email last night and I said, may God forgive me for agreeing with a monster like Putin. But I do. Mm-hmm. You know, under the Democrats, everything the United States touches turns into Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And those were his words. And he's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's just an inability to comprehend.
Well, Harry, I hate to say it, but, you know, it's all part of the program called UN Agenda 21, where the United States of America is a sovereign republic, ceases to exist. We reduce the world's population to fewer than a billion people. Everybody are totally controlled from cradle to grave by the same oligarchs who want to be in charge of our banking systems, in charge of everything in our government. And we are to live what those of us that remain, and I certainly don't plan on being one of them, will be totally controlled. We'll have no life at all. We'll be there to serve the state, period.
And you can trace some of this stuff by looking at who's who in the zoo, so to speak. The name Soros came up earlier. Take a guess. I would imagine that, you know, if something is very near and dear to his plans and his heart and his philosophy and so forth, he might put his kid in charge of it, right?
Yep.
Guess what part of his organizational empire he's made his kid in charge of?
Mm-hmm.
South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's a photo behind you there, Harry, also on that page of mine, where George Soros is standing there with the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, and then there's his son, Alexander.
Yeah, we've
Soros.
Got it. We've got it up right now, Hendrik. And incidentally, Ramaphosa really is kind of a weak leader. There's people behind the scenes who are much more vociferous communists who are in charge, like Malama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The point is that to the credit of Ramaphosa, he was not really part of the original militarily, if you want to call it that, minded ANC. He came later as a trade union leader and then became the most likely prince under Mandela, but that was not to be. There were a number of later guys who got the job. So when he came in, his problem is that he's not really part of that central heart. You know, in reality, he's not part of the extreme insane end, but he's more dangerous for that because he is nominally competent, and he, in order to get anything done, he needs the help of all those nasties. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so that is why it's on his watch that we got this dispossession, whatever you call it, without compensation. Okay,
mm-hmm.
taking away farmers' land without remunerating them, otherwise known as theft. So it's he who put that in the on the table in the end, and he's too weak to fight it off. He's basically institutionally too weak to get anything done. That's
kind of like Joe Biden, or China Joe Biden.
Yeah, like in the U.S., the far left now calls the shots, and in South Africa, the far left calls the shots.
Mm-hmm. And maybe adding to our earlier discussion as well, if we remind your listeners, if they listen to your previous shows, we quote, and what you said on your webpage as well, we're the canary in the coal mine. Mm-hmm. Now, for me and Harry, Harry is older than I am. I'm still probably a youngster, probably not that young. But I was the last one to be in the apartheid army. And I've seen Marxism close hand, and I've seen the new South Africa and the stages and everything. And everything that's happening in the U.S. is deja vu to us.
Yeah.
We've seen it all before. We see the stages. We see where we came from, all with high hopes and very positive, yep, to where we are now. And we see this happening in the U.S.
Absolutely.
And it started with this guy with George Soros. I'm sure he's probably not. He's maybe even a smaller guy for all we know. But he used South Africa as a testing ground, as a social experiment. He tested it on South Africa, and now he's doing it on the U.S. on a bigger scale. So it's all just the rehashing the anti-apartheid strategy all over again.
Maybe there's something that I think Americans don't know. And Dan, you may realize this, but it's worth just making this clear to folks. In the 1980s, when it was pretty obvious to most people that apartheid was failing, it wasn't going to make the grade. Mm-hmm. There was this arrangement by which a number of selected businessmen and philosophers and professors and generally left-leaning guys went off to another country in Africa to meet with the ANC. I want you to know that it was George Soros who arranged that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, if it hasn't been clear, when guys like Hendrik and I react to George Soros, it's because we know he is the creator of this new South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
This is his creation. He did this.
Totally true. And I even want to say, add to Harry, you know, many of us saw, you know, probably Zimbabwe was known as Rhodesia. Mm-hmm. And Rhodesia went the way it went. Zimbabwe went the way it went. And now we left as South Africa. But there's just a sea. We can't run anywhere. But many of the Rhodesians back then, Zimbabweans, complained and they said, yeah, you sold us down the drain. And the South mm-hmm. Africa said again, well, it's we wanted to win some time for us.
Yeah, it was the same thing you were talking about with the alligator, you know, the crocodile. Yes. You're buying a little bit of time thinking that if you feed Ian Smith and the Rhodesians to the crocodile first, then maybe it'll hold it off a while.
Correct. And I think Ronald Reagan did the same, maybe again, or the West, not Ronald Reagan, but the West did it with South Africa. They saw what was coming, but to win time, we were sold maybe down the drain for who knows what negotiation that didn't turn out the way it did.
Yes, I think Hendrik has just given me the cue for Ronald Reagan. We've lost Thumper for a minute. But
that's actually up on Hendrik's screen. Hendrik, would you maybe cut that one with George Soros and Ramaphosa? And we'll go back. Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Here. Okay. So I sent you an email titled just some clips. And inside that email, it says, here's what it looked like in South Africa. So I wrote, here's how it was done in South Africa and how your media prefer to present it. But Reagan actually knew the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. Congress vetoed him. It was the first time in history that the U.S. Congress overrode his... So he vetoed the comprehensive sanctions thing against South Africa. And Congress overturned his veto. That was the first time in U.S. history that a U.S. president had his veto in a foreign affairs matter overridden by Congress, who, as we know, is well informed on international matters, of course, you know, besides feathering their own nests.
Is that okay. The clip called copy of necklace graphic content?
No, it is the one that it says Winnie Mandela at Munsieville.
Ah, got that one. Okay. Got it.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to play the other one. I'm nervous about that, but it's what it looks like when it happens. So Winnie Mandela at Munsieville, followed by Reagan, and I gave the times for it to start it at second number five and stop it at 1 minute and 7 seconds.
All right, here we go. Okay, here we go. I apologize for the banging, but that's the roofers right over my head.
You sure it's not the Democrats getting in the door?
Well, I'm ready for him, Harry. I'm ready for him. Okay. We'll start at 5 seconds here and go out to 107. Here we go.
Nelson Mandela is serving a term of life imprisonment for sabotage and advocating the overthrow of the South African government. His wife, Winnie Mandela, is able to speak to the media. For foreign consumption, she presents a picture of reasonableness and nonviolence.
I have never personally believed in any violence, and no sane person can believe in any violence.
For home consumption,
with our necklaces we shall liberate this country.
These hands, our power, the people's power.
We don't want to allow that. We are not prepared for any violence.
In this barbaric way of reprisal, a tire is filled with kerosene or gasoline, placed around the neck of an alleged collaborator, and ignited. The victim may be a black policeman, a teacher, a soldier, a civil servant. It makes no difference. The atrocity is designed to terrorize blacks into ending all racial cooperation.
Okay, we can stop there. So, to my mind, yes, he was the best leader you guys had in my lifetime. And he nailed it. He nailed it exactly. That was exactly the truth that he had there. Okay. He should have known, because he had the reports from the CIA that I now have many years later. They, you know, redacted, but I have them, and they state that stuff. But he knew it at the time. And it was George Bush who was running the CIA, I think, at the time. Okay. So they knew. They knew.
Well,
and somehow your brilliant Congress decided, no, they actually knew a completely different truth and they must be right.
Well, and Harry, I'm no fan of George Herbert Walker Bush.
I know.
The reason I'm not is because he was a true globalist. He was a true progressive of the Republican Party. He's the worst thing that ever happened to Ronald Reagan. The fact that the Rockefeller brothers forced Reagan to take him as a vice presidential candidate almost resulted in Ronald Reagan losing his life. And being assassinated and replaced by George Herbert Walker Bush. I'm telling you, the Bush family are very, very dangerous.
My only point is Reagan knew and Congress thought they knew better. So I don't think you need to see people being burnt to death in the other video. I think if Reagan tells you that's what they did, that's good enough for most Americans, including most Democrats I know. Mm-hmm. Okay. Unfortunately, Americans did not hear him speak those words. I don't know where he was recorded saying that, but he did. He also had a press conference, which I have, and he was quite clear about what's going on in South Africa, but it wasn't good enough for your clever... your very clever Congress, who, as you know, Americans marvel at their brilliance, staggered by their intelligence. You know, the most well-loved institution in America must be Congress.
Well, exactly. They, that's why their approval rating is 8%.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But in the end, you know, Dan, I'm quite heartbroken with Trump having been ousted out of the White House. I personally don't believe he lost the election. As a scientist and a PhD who can do maths and can do complicated maths and have done it all my life, okay, I can tell you that what happened in the United States is a statistical impossibility. Mm-hmm. And please, don't let supposedly intelligent people try to dissuade me from my view. I'm going to slap them.
Well, I think everybody with a brain bigger than a pea understands. Incidentally, the new film that's coming out on the 20th by Mike Lindell is called Absolute Interference. And that's why I'm going to volunteer my my little saying is something that becomes, I guess, a hallmark of the New Freedom Movement. We no longer have presidential elections. We have residential selections. Yeah. And that's exactly it.
Do you know a television series called Blackadder?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. I think the second season, maybe, or the third season, the one where he deals with a prince, where he is the second in command for the prince. That series ought to be compulsory viewing, particularly for anyone who voted for President Biden. And I would also suggest that the British sitcom series, Yes, Mr. Minister, should be compulsory viewing. While Blackadder was done purely in jest, the British series was done because the Brits understood what the word deep state meant. And they actually made the series as a play on that. Okay. Where the minister is just the yokel in the seat and the other guys are running everything. Okay. And in typical British fashion, they do a superb job of explaining that in very, very humorous fashion. Okay. Sorry, boys, but that's what you got now. Absolutely. That's what you got.
If I can butt in, I'm not sure if you can share my screen there.
Somewhere. Yes, we got it up. Yes, it's up.
Yeah, we've got we had a famous president, and you probably know Paul Kruger. Kruger coins, and he lived more than 100 years ago, and he said, search in your past for what is good and beautiful, and build your future upon it. Mm-hmm. What the ANC is doing is it's taking the bad from the past and it wants to build the future upon it. And that's what Marxists all over the world is currently doing. Even in your country, we see this. And like President Trump wanted to make America great again, I say again, Biden wants to make America lame again. Mm-hmm. There's a video link that I just sent you, Thumper, if you can maybe just play that from 26 seconds, just to rehash what Biden said during apartheid. I mean, the man just talks nonsense. His actions doesn't correspond with his words. It's all nice words. Marxists like using nice words, but the actions are just the opposite.
5-year plans.
Okay. Hendrik, do you have the ability to play that clip?
Sure. I'm not sure if you can see the screen.
Oh, yeah, we're seeing it. We're seeing everything you've got.
All right, let me play from 26.
Okay. Yep, we've got it.
Hold on. Can you
see George Shultz and O'Biden?
Mm-hmm. Not sure if you can hear the screen.
Let's see if we can turn the volume up.
Stupid government over there. Let me get this closer.
He has no loyalty to them.
It could be sound. Let me just try again with my sound maybe going up.
Yeah, put your sound up a little bit. Okay, put your screen up again with O'Biden and Schultz.
Not the South Africans, the South Africans. The South Africans are majority black, and they are being excoriated. It is not for some stupid puppet government over there. It is not.
So that's, I'm not sure if you could hear what he said there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's typical Biden. And now Americans see firsthand that a lot of the nonsense and garbage they were sold during the apartheid days were just that. It was garbage. It was half-truths dressed up as truth and lies dressed up as truth. And now Americans see for themselves.
Oh, this has been my comment over the past 4 years, is that I don't have to explain that anymore. They can just watch CNN for themselves and look out their window and they realize they're being lied to, you know. But half the U.S. population, I guess, doesn't want to look out the window.
I've got a statistic, Harry and Hendrik. I've got a statistic. I don't even know where I got it from, but it talks about the death rate from, political reasons in South Africa. And it goes from the original when the trekkers and the Volksters were fighting with the Zulus and so forth. They had a figure of somewhere around 6,800 people were killed during that era. Then they talked about the Boer War and that there were something over 100,000 people killed during that time frame. Then they go to step forward to life under apartheid, and somewhere around 28,000 died as a result of political reasons during that reign. And now they're talking about since the ANC took control, and it's 340,000 people, and that was as of 2017. I'm sure that number's increased by a significant amount. Mm-hmm. So obviously, if you just look at the numbers, they don't make sense. It doesn't add up.
Well, Dad, I asked that Thumper play that Reagan bit with Winnie Mandela saying that with our necklaces we will liberate the country, referring to the gasoline-soaked tires. My comment is, now it's the turn of the U.S. It will manifest itself differently in that country, but you will recognize it when it happens. It will be a tax on the security and educational systems of the country and on those who do not conform to the narrative of the crowd. In South Africa, those who didn't conform were burnt to death. That's not what will happen in the US. You will definitely be cancelled. Your career will be destroyed, etc. Mm-hmm. But it is the same basic scheme. Ultimately, make it ungovernable, continue the attacks on the security and educational systems, and in your case, certainly also on the church, okay? And sideline, silence, cancel, if necessary, terminate those who don't conform to the narrative of the crowd. And the narrative of the crowd will be the narrative of your media, which is already taken over. Like I said, I need to understand why people whom I previously considered intelligent and good reporters have gone stupid. There must be a reason. Somebody is working them.
Yeah, well, it usually comes down to the same thing, and it's the same thing that happened in Nazi Germany during World War II. They said, well, I was just doing my job. I was just doing my job.
Yeah.
Well, they're not doing their job. They're doing a lousy job. And the fact is, they're supposed to be reporters, but now they're not. They're just there to mouth whatever their handlers tell them to say.
Yeah. And the stuff, by the way, what's happening in the general population of the United States is, by the way, also happening in the scientific community, with scientists being fired for not towing the political line. Mm-hmm. Political line now means if you don't agree about carbon dioxide and temperature, then you get fired, or you don't get supported for your grants, or you get basically cancelled. Mm-hmm. The way that the scientific community cancels people,
cancel so culture.
The whole cancel culture is extended to science. All of which means that you cannot today trust a scientist anymore. You can imagine how I feel about that, mm-hmm. right? To me, when all was gone, I could still trust the scientists because they are, it's almost, although they don't sign the Hippocratic Oath, the unspoken oath among scientists is that you report the truth the way you see the truth and you state the truth the way you see the truth, okay? You can no longer believe them. Ever, I don't know, I guess when you start having to put the word science into the description of your field, it is no longer a science. So when you have to talk about climate science and you have to add the word science to make people believe it's a science, you got to know that you're on thin ice. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yes, I'm a hard scientist. I'm a physicist. I work with numbers and proven facts and evidence and things like that. And I deal with attorneys and they want facts and they want evidence. I've dealt with facts and evidence and evidentiary processes all my life. I'm sickened by what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. I'm sickened by what I'm seeing around, for example, the civil liberties kind of attorneys in the U.S., which go entirely one way. They have nothing to do with real liberty anymore. In the science environment, the scientists who dare to present data that they don't like get shut up, get their careers destroyed. There is a sickness on the prowl in Western society that makes me lose faith in the entire animal called the West. Mm-hmm. It is sick. It is deeply, deeply sick. It is infested.
Well, and the sad part about that, Harry, is the biggest part of that sickness is a lack of the, I guess what I would call the internal fortitude to stand up for what you believe in. They've allowed themselves to be coerced into something that, it's gutlessness. It's just that simple. And but at the same time, it's good people who are allowing themselves to go through this process. And, you know, your comment about the Dutch Reformed people, trying to go along, trying to, can't believe, you know, as you say, they go have another prayer group and hope that the Lord will intercede. But the Lord wants us to act in our own regard. He doesn't want us to be a bunch of gutless shills for some process that just eats us alive.
Well, I sort of checked some of that with the church minister of a Reformed church in Canada, who helped me on my book, and I told him that I'm worried about my line about you can't just sit there and present the other cheek. I don't think that's right, that you do nothing and you put the entire load on the shoulders of God. And he came back to me and he said, not only are you right, Harry, but I'll prove it for you completely out of scripture. So that's where I stand. But all of this allows me to go right back to where I came in, Dan, and my love for the old gentleman who worked at Bletchley Park during the Second World War, and he did his piece, and he understood what he was fighting for. He understood why his country was at war. He was doing his piece. It takes me back to my uncle, who was the dispatch rider in Italy during the Italian campaign, and my father-in-law, who saw most of his friends die, many of them in flames. You know, his squadron was decimated. Inadequate aircraft, no oxygen to fly higher, and the Germans knew it and could just dive down at them out of the sun. They had little recourse. But he kept fighting. You know, he was one of the third that was left, but they kept fighting. And when they had no more planes, they got in a boat and they rowed themselves from the island of Kos to the Turkish mainland, using nothing but their tin hats. They didn't have oars. Okay, so I look at all of that stuff and I ask myself, what is it I will be telling my grandkids? And I have some stuff to tell them. I had my war. I did my bit in my war, you know. And then I look at the next generation. And they're going to have absolutely nothing useful to say to their children mm-hmm. or to their grandchildren because they weren't prepared to stand for a damn thing worth anything. That's the way I see it. They just ain't got it.
Well, and Harry, I'm going to add something there that people need to realize. Those same people, that generation you're talking about, they aren't going to have children and grandchildren. They're going to be part of the people who exterminated. So their lack of leadership and their lack of the ability to discern the difference between truth and freedom and the crap that we're going through right now are going to lead to the extermination of the race. And I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is, because the same people who want to get rid of us want to get rid of the rest yeah. of us as well.
Well, I'm just looking at time here. But
yeah, we're running out of time. You. I hate to. I want to give Hendrik a chance. Hendrik, thank you for being part of this program. I'd like you to be able to close out with a few of your comments, and then I need to turn over to Nurse Nat and Gert and their program. I'm sorry I'm biting into your time a little bit. Hendrik, tell our viewers and our listeners what you think about the future.
I think we can still come out of this. Let's see what President Trump does. And if he does, we need to go back and educate our kids what communism does, what leftism does. I don't think we've previous generation has done a proper job mm-hmm. in doing that. And that is why we are repeating and reinventing the wheel. And unfortunately, we are going to find out the hard way why we had rules in the first place. If my country needs to be the example for the world, why we need to go back to the old ways, then it seems like the route we are going are that we are going to be an example. Like Venezuela is to many Americans and many people around the world, something bad, I hope not, but it seems like something bad's going to happen in my country. And it's only after it happened, only then people will wake up. But I sincerely hope Americans are awake and they stop this in some way or form, because like Harry said, the election of President Trump was stolen. That was clear as daylight. This illegitimate president now thinking he's a president shouldn't be there, but there is still hope. Don't give up, keep fighting, and you have allies everywhere, not just in the US. It's fighting with you, but don't forget your allies. Thank you, and thank you for having me on the show.
Well, I appreciate your comments, and the point of all that, and Harry and Hendrik both, the point of all that is that we've got to we've got to keep fighting. We've got to stand up and make sure that we do the right thing. And that doesn't mean that we have to go out and shoot people or create a street war or anything like that. We just need to stand up in enough numbers that people understand that we are fighting for our lives, and we stand up in large enough numbers, they'll disappear. Because the fact is most of these people are cowards that are fighting us and that are pushing the communist ideal. Harry, Hendrick, thank you both for being guests. I look forward to the next discussion. I tell you what, this is, you guys are like old friends. I just love you guys. And I ask our listeners, please come back and join us again on Sunday and next Tuesday and help us connect dots.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, where the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't